Well, Molly Ivins was a true Texan born and bred. She was also an acclaimed and very liberal journalist who thrived in the cutthroat world of Texas politics. Filmmaker Janice Engel is here to tell us about her new documentary, Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins. Welcome to the Sundance Reel.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here on NPR, an NPR affiliate. Thank you.
Well, talk about your interest in Molly Ivins. The producer in front of us. I mean, so many interesting people in the world to make a film about. Why Molly?
There had never been anything done on Molly. And my producing partner, James Egan, actually came to me and said, do you know who she is? And I said, well, vaguely, because I grew up in New York and L.A. I moved out to L.A. And so at the time, this is 6.5 years ago, there was a play, Red Hot Patriot, The Kick-Ass Wit of Molly Ivins, starring Kathleen Turner, done by the Engel sisters, the playwrights, and he said, you need to go see it. It's closing this week. So I bought a ticket. I was blown away by the material and who she was. I mean, I got home and I Googled immediately. And I called him the next morning. He said, nothing's ever been done. And I said, let's do this. So here we are.
Yeah. She died in 2007. So you didn't get to talk to her then.
No, I didn't get to meet her, but as I jumped in, literally, once we got the approval within a couple of weeks from her estate, which was the Texas Observer and the ACLU, 3 weeks later, I was on a plane to Texas with our third producing partner, the Texan, Carlisle Vandervoort, who was born and raised just like Molly, and they both grew up in River Oaks in Houston and went to the same private school. So we were on our way, and I can't tell you, Molly's friends, her colleagues, her family, anyone who knew her, opened their arms, opened their doors, and let us in, and which was a testament to who she was, warm-hearted and open and incredibly inclusive. And so that's how we got started.
With so much material, I guess, meeting all those folks, how did you find what you needed to tell the story?
Well, therein lies the rub. 6.5 years. Well, making a documentary is always a long road. I said I've been climbing a mountain called Molly for about, 6 years. The material was substantial. It started with 6 interviews, and I ended up with 45. Not everybody made the cut, but every interview unlocked another door and let me in. Not only that, I come from a background of documentaries, and I know you have to dig in. And I dug in, and I unearthed stuff of Molly. I was in her archives. I lived in the Briscoe, the Center for American Studies at UT, where her papers are housed, and for periods of time, several months, 2013, 2015, and aside from talking to everybody who knew her throughout her life. And so in her archives, I found so much material. But what was really amazing, once you amass all that, you have transcripts, you do selects, you pick your selects. And I had broken down her story based on her biography in a linear fashion, and then also themes. So, speaking truth to power, prescience, relevance, corporate greed, Iraq War, presidents, I broke it down thematically as well, her early years, Smith, all of that, growing up rich and then all of that stuff. And I did that with every single interview. I had a grid. It was crazy. And Molly, I broke everything down, and it was a mountain, and I created select reels, and from the select reels, I culled it down even further. So.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you spoke with a number of her longtime friends or coworkers, and then also Dan Rather and Anne Lamott. Now, Dan, because he's from Texas and worked during the same.
They were colleagues. They were colleagues. And they knew each other. His interview was a 90-minute master. Gave me a 90-minute interview. It was a master class in journalism. It was incredible. And it was very interesting because I went into introduced myself, and we shot him in his pita tear in Austin, and he was having some makeup done, and he shook my hand. I said, Mr. Rather, he said, call me Dan. And he said, so Janice, I really want you to talk about whether, playing an inside game or an outside game. And that was great, because there was actually something that I had in my questions. And he said, he looked at me and he goes, let me guess, you play an outside game. And I said, that would be yes. And that was, we just hit it off. And Molly played an outside game. And it's like, inside means you have access.
Right. Well, and that was kind of an interesting that you brought to the film, talking about how Molly was an outsider and basically gave her the freedom to say what she wanted until Ann Richards was elected.
Well,
as governor of Texas.
Yeah, I mean, well, they were friends. And as Molly said, you know, I already knew her. So she didn't talk to her much. I mean, if some people criticize Molly for being too light on Ann when she was in office. And then some, you know, people always went after Molly. You know, either she was, you know, she wasn't strong enough or she was too light. But with Ann, because they were friends, they had a long history. And, you know, that's between them. I don't know. I didn't get to talk to Molly myself or Ann. They're both gone. Mm-hmm. But those clips are hilarious.
Can you imagine? I mean, between the two of them? Yeah.
A field day. Well, Cecile is in it, you know, and can you imagine being a teenager growing? I mean, well, we asked her, what was it like? She said, you know, the adults, they were all off partying and we were left to our own devices.
You know, physically, Molly was 6 feet tall. Her size was brought up a few times in the film. How do you think her physical presence made a difference? I mean, did it give her courage to stand up to those with power?
I think what gave her courage to stand up to those, yeah, I definitely think height has something to do with it. I think if you're very, there's two ways that could go. You're very tall and you become the wallflower in the room, right? Or you're very short and you become the wallflower in the room. And I find that I'm a short person. And I think it makes you tenacious. The same way where Molly knew her height, you know, as she says, I was, you know, a St. Bernard amongst greyhounds. You know, the height made her very insecure growing up, but she used it. She knew. And I think, you know, she used it pretty wisely. You know, she said women were relegated to the snake pit. But, you know, the editors never said, oh, you poor dainty little thing. We'll never send you out to cover. You know, it was like, Ivans, get your ass out there.
Mm-hmm. A couple of times. She didn't get to witness the 2016 election of Donald Trump, but if she was still with us, I mean, what do you think she would have had to? What do you think she would have to say about President Trump's comments that the media is fake news and the media the enemy of the people?
I think she would have gone for his jugular. She'd be eating him from breakfast, lunch, and dinner. She would be dining out. And can you imagine Molly Ivans on Twitter? because she was so witty, so quick. I mean, if you look at, I'm not Molly Ivans. I don't have her kind of humor. But if you look at what she said about Pat Buchanan's culture war speech, mm-hmm. that it probably sounded so much better in its original German, that would have been a great Twitter bite. She already had that skill. And imagine when it went from, you know, 140 to 280, she would be going crazy. She would be having a field day. I think she would have been horrified. I think she, you know, Molly said, I am an optimist to the point of idiocy. And I think she would have been out there railing and igniting people to take back our democracy. It's up to us. You know, she always said that. We're the deciders.
Yeah. How do you think she's influenced journalists today?
I think that journalists who studied her and know who she is, I think when I've talked to them, the ones who know who they are, they always cite her as someone like a Bacon. Of truth and fearlessness. I mean, Molly, you know, Paul Krugman said Molly Ivans was the most courageous person I ever knew. She cited the prescience about the Iraq War when it was very unpopular to not show that sense of patriotism after 9/11. And it wasn't, she was very patriotic. That's why she spoke her truth. She's incredibly patriotic.
And I don't know, does that come with the Texas upbringing?
I think that, yeah, I think Texan has a Texas is so interesting. It's such a, you know, it's like, she said Texas is the national laboratory for bad government. Then, you know, Gail Collins said, wrote the book As Goes Texas. I mean, Lawrence Wright has a book out. Texas is a blueprint for America. And I think that patriotism is railed a lot. It's railed about and rallied about a lot in Texas. And I think Texas is a good cross-section of our country. So, you know, I think Texas probably played a part of that, but I think it's just who she was. I think it's just in her bones who she was.
Well, and then there was a scene in the film, too, also about how she understood Bubba speak. Talk to us a little bit about Bubba.
Oh, my God. So that's those clips, I had to have those in the film about Bubba. And then Babette, don't mess with Babette. And I'm not going to tell because people should see the film. But, you know, Molly, you know, Lou DeBow said Molly spoke Smith. She spoke Smith College English. She spoke fluent French. And she spoke Texan, which she appropriated from all those gargoyles who were running the state. all men. And Molly was, she was like this mimic, you know, she picked it up. And she was a Texan, and she appropriated it. And because she was who she was, I mean, if you look at a lot of strong Texas women, Ann Richards, they all have that kind of quality. And Molly just kind of reported, she was a reporter, she reported on what she heard, and she made it her own. She, that became her professional Texan voice. And it worked really well because her heart was so tied into the people. And, you know, she goes, I don't care about who's, you know, I don't care about who's doing the screwing. I only care about who's getting screwed.
Yeah. And again, I mean, the thick skin, because there were also a scene where it talks about how newspapers would pay for her column just so another newspaper couldn't run it. And then they never published the columns. Yeah. I mean, that's how, I mean, they didn't want Texans reading her.
Not just Texans, in all different states that had areas, rural areas where it's polarization, you know, that's censorship. So she was a victim of censorship. She was a victim of terrible hate mail. And that started back in 1968 when she was just a reporter at the Minneapolis Tribune. She got, I mean, I saw it. We're going to get you, bitch, and, you know, symbols of the Klan and swastikas, letters that were sent to her. In 1968, when she was just your straight reporter, where she did a column on the Young Radicals, and then her editor said, you can't just, you have to be, it's fair and balanced. You have, so she did the Young Conservatives, and then she did a whole bunch of different columns like that, and that's what drew a lot of ire.
And what she also said about politics, we can laugh, we can cry, or we can vomit, and laughter seems to be the best way to go.
That is one of my favorite things that Molly Ivins says, because I just, you know, it's so Molly, you know, you can laugh, you can cry, you can throw up. Throwing up's no good for you, might as well just laugh. And I think that was her whole point was, and she used that humor because she knew, Jim Hightower said so brilliantly in the film, which is that she knew that humor was the door key to the brain, that you've got to unlock that little door in order to reach people. And she knew that. I mean, think about what the comedians do today. It does. It breaks it down. You laugh about it, and then it actually makes you think about it.
Yeah. Well, she was just, you'd love to have her as a best friend because she was just so funny. And I think that she really only picked on those people that needed picking on is what kind of her MO was.
Yeah, when she saw that things were, you know, corruption, and she saw that, she went right for the jugular. That's what satire is. You know, she went right for it. But there was always underlying, there was always this good-natured warmth to her, that it was never really mean. I never felt it was really mean. I thought it was wildly funny. She was just stating the obvious in a very clever way.
Well, you've got three more screenings again of Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins this afternoon, 5:45 at Prospector Square, tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the Park Avenue Theater, and then Friday the 1st, 3 o'clock at Redstone Cinema. Any distribution plans for?
We're hoping to make a sale. We're out there. We're out there buying in our pots and pans to get Molly out to the greater public. People need to. I am so grateful because I get to share who she is. I've been living in the world of Molly for 6.5 years, and now I get to share it with all y'all. And it's the greatest gift. I get to do that.
Okay. Janice Engel, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Janice.
You're listening to the Sundance Reel here on KPC.